Well, let's get started.
Okay, great.
Welcome to Peace Session Number 2, Becoming a Peace Master. This is a big one, Setting in Motion a Peace Process. And I would like to begin with an embarrassing story. What better way to kick off the piece than...
And everybody can hear us, right?
Yep.
Okay.
In my previous marriage, 7 years. You know, I was just treated, the best I can describe it is I was treated with neutrality. I wasn't hated, I wasn't loved, it was just like she was along for the ride, you know, and it sure felt terrible.
Were you like ignored?
Yeah,
ignored
was so, the big thing.
You know, I don't think ignored is really neutral. It creates strong feelings. Yeah. It must have really hurt.
Well, it did. And I kept envisioning, like we talked about last week, that there's got to be a solution to this. I didn't know what it would be, but I was envisioning that. And then one day it came to me to set in motion a process. And what I did is, and this was funny, I said to her, I said, you know, our marriage is not working well for either of us. And if it's going to continue, we need to work on it. And I said, are you willing to work on it? And she said, no. Well, that was obviously a turning point. And actually soon after that, we were divorced amicably. And what a relief that was. But here's what's embarrassing about that story is, why did I wait 7 years to ask that question?
It's unbelievable what we're willing to tolerate. And thinking it's going to improve or it's going to change somehow. We always have this hope. It's just, I know, you're looking back, you can't believe you waited 7 years.
And that's, to me, is a good example of, yes, envisioning, which we talked about last week, is not only necessary, but it's powerful. But without setting in motion a process, envisioning is more like dreaming or hoping. And I had envisioned something better, but I assumed it would be an improved marriage. Yeah. I didn't assume she would answer that with no. So I think one of the big things is don't get stuck in the how. When I asked that question, I wasn't like trying to get a predetermined course of action set. I was just starting a process. And sometimes when you start a process, you don't know where it's going to go. And you don't have to. That's the good news. And the results are often surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of indicative of how it took you 7 years to arrive at a point to speak up for yourself, to arrive at a point of, wait a minute, I'm miserable. This is no longer acceptable. Is there something I can do? Why don't I start a dialogue and, you know, we're reasonable people, we'll work this out, right? You didn't dream it was going to be a divorce.
Yeah.
I mean, given the options, that's a lot of work to go through a divorce.
Well, here's a, yes, it's true. But if I hadn't asked that question, I wouldn't be sitting here today with Shannon.
Right.
So setting in motion a peace process is not about taking clear, defined steps like do A, then B, then C. It's often more vague. But it is about setting in motion something, and it gets set in motion within you. I didn't ask my previous wife, can I talk to you about something? I started, it had to come, and this is the beauty of envisioning, the first skill, and then setting in motion, our invisible internal skills that don't depend on anybody but you. Again, that's what makes it embarrassing for me, because nothing was holding me back from setting in motion a process much earlier.
Yeah. You know, it really begins with a decision. you decided to set in motion a peace process. And you figured, well, this is going to be worked out. I mean, we'll just bring it up. We'll have a good discussion. And, you know, then she'll change, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot easier to change than to get a divorce.
Yeah. Well,
it just shows you how deep, how deeply seated that ignoring you was as a pattern in the marriage. It was deeply seated. And now,
go ahead.
And so we churn and we go through turmoil internally before we come to this decision. My God, I've got to do something. This is unacceptable. I'm miserable here. You know, to decide, to come to that moment of deciding to set in motion a peace process.
And sometimes it can be very quick. I'll give you one more other example, because this is one I'm not embarrassed about. But I was in Disneyland with some friends some years back, and it was very crowded. And as we were going through the crowd, I noticed a little five-year-old girl. Our grandson is 5 years old, yeah. So it's about his age. And she was crying and by herself. So I could see my friends were, I was going to lose them if I stopped. But it seemed like I was envisioning that the right thing would happen to her. But at the same moment, I also envisioned I'm going to set in motion a process to help her.
Why was she crying?
She had lost her mother.
Oh.
And so I kneeled down, crouched down and said, "What's the problem?" And she said, "I can't find my mother." And I said, "I'll stay with you until your mom comes back." And you know what's interesting? She stopped crying instantly because she was comforted. I didn't have a plan. And actually it came to me as I was, but I had started a process. One of the keys. You don't need to know what the outcome is going to be. Of course, we want to find the mother, but how is that going to happen? Well, I hadn't even thought about that. And as I was talking to her, I thought, well, what do I do now? And instead of going off to try to find some employee of Disneyland, I figured they'd find us or the mother would find us. I just came to me in the process just to keep talking to the girl and comforting her and just stay in place and let the universe provide the solution. And that went on for, I'd say, about 10 minutes. And finally, the mother appeared, obviously fabulously relieved. And that was the end. So that's an example of envisioning and instantly setting in motion a peace process. But you don't need to know how you're going to do it or what the outcome is going to be. That's the beauty of it. You're not really setting in process peace or an outcome or a how. You're setting in motion a process. And that takes all the pressure off, because in a process, there's no right or wrong. There's no failure or success. You're just in the motion of helping peace come forward.
Yeah. Wow. You know, in deciding to put into motion a peace process, some kind of process of that's going to lead to an outcome of resolution, if you will, hopefully peacefully. I grew up, well, first of all, I have a lot of stress in my life, a lot, even last night and this morning. And I'm constantly negotiating my inner talk towards moving towards that. And I've already decided I've got to move towards peace. I think everybody that's on this call has decided you've got to move towards peace for whatever reason in your life. It's an inner turmoil, or if it's the family turmoil, or a friend or boss or whatever it is, or the country or the world. The decision to come to terms with that enormous welling with inside of emotion. And I want to talk about the force of that emotion and to put into perspective what it means to come to a decision to deal with it. I grew up about 45 miles west of the mighty Mississippi River, and it is very mighty. And it's called that for a reason. Its currents, it brings all the water, all the ice melting snow from all the rivers above, all the way from the Great Lakes all the way down south. And I'm close to Memphis, so it's almost, you know, it's another 400 miles to New Orleans where it comes out the mouth. And that river is raging. And everybody that lives close to the Mississippi River has a healthy respect for the power of that river. In the springtime, well, entire barges have disappeared, just instantly disappeared because of the undercurrents going in that river. There's sand dunes and all kinds of undercurrents creating, and then the force of moving southward with a massive amount of water, especially in the springtime. In the springtime, often it will flood. And we're all watching the flood stages because my daddy was a farmer and we lived 45 miles west. It often came and flooded our farm 45 miles away. So it's a wild force of nature. And so I'm equating that welling of deep, huge, aggressive feeling inside where we're coming to terms with, I've got to do something about this. I've got to do something about this anger, about this person that's treating me this way, or this chronic stressful situation in my life, or do I need to speak up? You know, whatever we need to do, we're coming to terms with, it's bubbling up. And it's like the mighty Mississippi River in the springtime where that thing's gonna flood. So in order to create damage control early, if you will, we need to exercise critical thinking. Critical thinking, it's critical. What you say, what you do, at those moments of rage or of welling with inside so much hurt, where hurt turns into rage. It's very similar feeling. It's very aggressive. And making the decision to come out of this raging river is equivalent to what happened in the 1800s with the Mississippi River. There was a giant earthquake recorded, and it actually reversed the direction of the mighty Mississippi River. Can you imagine? And sometimes I think about that, the reversal of an entire raging river to move it northward instead of southward. That's a huge moment of transition. And that's what we're often up against when we are seething, raging, these aggressive feelings. They drive us nuts. I mean, they just absolutely are so stressful and so disturbing. So this critical thinking of coming to a decision to set in motion something new, something of peace, something that is going to be forward-looking, with bringing in some light, bringing in something new to shift this whole impossible feeling situation. And it can be overwhelming. Is there anything you want to say? I want to give another example, but...
Well, just one thing, as you were talking about that with the emotion, is you have to get to a place when you're setting in motion a peace process. It really won't usually happen unless you're at peace. Like if you're angry, what's the fat chance that you're going to set in motion a peace process? Or if you're overwhelmed. So it's a lot of this envisioning is and making the decision to do the higher thing, but it involves, this is what's wonderful about it, it's an internal healing process, because you have to decide it's more important to you, more important to me, if we have an argument, for us to set in motion peace than to stew and continue to think I'm the one who was right.
Yeah, but you know, I'm kind of disagreeing with you here. I'm thinking that if I'm overwhelmed with emotion and aggression internally, and I'm so disturbed and so upset and so angry, I have to come to terms with making a decision before I can come into peace. Until I've decided I'm going to deal with it, it's just going to keep raging and taking over my life. So,
you know, that's actually a good thought. I want to show the screen here and share something. Here's the peace guide again. So we're talking right here about setting in motion the peace process.
Decide to
set in motion. But this is what is interesting to me. This is what a peace master And you're going to be, at the end of this course, you're going to feel confident with each one of these skills. But all of these skills, get the feelings out, listen with compassion. How are you going to do that if you're angry? Express unconditional. All of these fabulous skills really can't happen until you've set in motion a peace process.
Yeah.
So that's the most important thing that I wanted to share. Just, and it's interesting because as a peace master, get used to incorporating that peace guide and all of those steps. They don't have to occur in order, but they're part of your arsenal. Those are 11 things that you can do to create peace, but 9 of the 11 won't be available to you if you haven't decided to set in motion a peace process.
Yeah. And when you, at the moment in which you make that decision of internally thinking, you know, I can't stand this anymore, I've got to do something different, I can't live with this kind of disturbance, this turmoil inside, at that moment you don't feel peaceful. But the mere decision to decide to put it into motion, I've got to do something new, I've got to bring in some light, I've got to, you know, rethink this, I need to bring in my inner guidance, my wisdom, you know, really rely on your principles, the things that you practice, pull in the arsenal at that point. You won't feel peaceful at that moment, but you've decided you're going to set in motion something new. And that really, I would say, 9 times out of 10 is how I come into peace.
Well,
is that decision.
And what's interesting about what we're both saying a little bit differently is there's no one right way to be a peacemaster. There's lots of approaches, and that's why, and we've said before, that creating peace is muddy.
It's muddy.
it's messy. It's not like you go from here to here to here, and it's not simple. It calls on all of your inner strength to do each one of the skills of being a peacemaster. But that's the beauty of it. It's also the beauty that you don't have to do it Shannon's way or my way or your, there's lots of ways to approach it.
I think that coming to the decision of creating peace, putting that into motion, and it brings you into a little bit of self-restraint where you can control your emotions for a moment in that, maybe a moment, I need to make a decision. This is unacceptable. And I'd like to talk a moment about our energies, and because that's really, I think what I bring to the table today in this wonderful class is a mindfulness practice around our energies, which we feel deeply when we're loving someone or having a happy moment or being grateful, and you know, those beautiful energies are those energies which are so aggressive and overwhelming almost when we're so exasperated, so frustrated, so tired of the same old problem appearing yet again, and it's been chronic, maybe it's gone on a long time and you're sick and, you know, just fed up with it. Scott and I, many years ago, started taking yoga regularly in classes, and we had an extraordinary teacher, and we learned from her about the energies. That she would watch us walking into class, and we found out this a long time later, she would watch us walking into class, and she would sort of evaluate where everybody's energy was. And in yoga, they teach that there are 3 types of energies. One is raja, and that's the animal raging, you know, that energy. And we all get that when we're stressed. I mean, that comes up all the time. You put an awareness around it, you probably have it quite often. But these are very changeable. And then there's the other energy, just the opposite really, is tamasic. And the tamasic energy is sort of lethargic. You're just tired, you know, it's been a long day, been a hard week, whatever. You're just lethargic, you're tired, you go into yoga class, you just lay down and, you know, you'd rather have a nap probably. Well, the yoga teachers, in her mind, her job was to move the raja and the tamasic into a balanced state. Wherever you were when you came in there, she wanted you to leave in the sattva state. The sattva is where you feel peaceful. It's where you feel balanced. You feel that equanimity. You feel at peace. It's a wonderful feeling. And it's interesting to me that within an hour of a yoga class, over and over and over, didn't you find, Scotty, you would be shifted and you'd walk out of there going, wow, I feel so much better. You can't even explain it. I mean, your parasympathetic nervous system has been ignited and you've opened up your energies and your prana is running beautiful. That prana is your life energy. It's that vital force of life. It turns on your immune system. It turns on your pleasure state of joy. Prana is absolutely essential for vitality of life. And so I think it's interesting that a super aggressive energy can be calmed down within an hour and even faster than that. And I feel that even when I'm in a super aggressive energy and feeling overwhelmed, that the moment I decide I've got to deal with this, so I might start watching my inner talk. You know, my inner talk might be, oh God, this always happens to me. Is it me? Is it something I said? Oh God, I probably said something wrong. I probably did this wrong. This is probably my fault. You know, all of that inner talk. Or the inner talk might be, oh, it's him. It's definitely him. I didn't do it. You know, he does this to me all the time. Whatever the inner talk is, when the raja or the pain of the hurt, generally, often when we're hurt, we feel more tamasic, you know, lethargic. And when we're angry, we feel the raja. But either way, whichever way that energy is running, it can be moved with a decision, maybe not instantly, and mostly not instantly. We bring in the critical thinking, we show a little bit of observation and self-restraint, and we move towards that higher place of balance. Balanced energy. When you think of the value of balanced energy, it's the whole feeling of peace. It's what we all crave. Our souls crave peace because our souls, when our souls are peaceful, they can soar. It's just, there's nothing we can't do. It's so beautiful. Our light brightens. We light up the world. So just this awareness of these energies is very helpful.
And you know, there's conflicts that need to be addressed at so many levels. Conflicts within our own sense of our identity, where we're at war with ourselves over some, you know, most people don't like themselves for many reasons. There's conflicts with your intimate relationships, conflicts at work, and then conflicts in the politically or the world at large. So there's conflicts all over that are asking for our attention.
They press. They really press.
Yeah, and it's. I think there's so many ways that you come into balance. You know, sometimes you have to retreat and find your own central core.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's one thing that a lot of intense conflicts have in common, whether it's politically or nationally or internationally or within relationships, is they don't seem solvable.
Well, that's true. Especially at the overwhelmed state.
My marriage was, you know, did not seem solvable. And I can think of a lot of things as I look out in the world that don't seem solvable right now. So it takes a understanding that comes from this awareness as a peace master is that it's okay that it doesn't look solvable because the solution will come out of the process.
Ooh, I love that.
And that's what's, so the key is to just start the process.
Yeah.
I remember a funny story. My real estate partner, Bob Griswold, and I were going over to see a client that was one of our listings. You know, we had the for sale sign in front of his house and we were trying to sell his house. And when we arrived, the sign was missing. So
Is that a big deal?
Well, you say, where did the sign go? We walked over to the side of the house and the sign was destroyed. It looked, somebody had punched it and hit it with a hammer and obviously was angry. And we both kind of knew it was the husband.
Which kind of tells you your state of relationship in that professional.
He was, we assumed he was real angry. And as we walked up to ring the doorbell, my partner, who has a fabulous sense of humor, said, well, Scott, I'm looking forward to seeing how your peace skills handle this one. And so when we went in, he was so red with rage that he couldn't speak.
Your client.
His wife didn't know what to do because we had had a good relationship before this. And
what happened? Why was he so angry?
You know, the more important question is, what was happening within me?
Yeah, what are you going to do about it?
What am I going to do about it? And so, you know, like, I made the decision, even as we rang the doorbell, that I was going to set in motion a process to bring about peace. That was what was in my heart. So I was detaching from the anger. That's one of our skills coming up. And I was letting my heart move from not condemning him and not condemning myself. And when we went in, I just asked him, I said, so tell me why you're so angry. And then I just listened. And all of the energy level came down like this. To this day, I can't remember what he was angry about. But I can tell you
this,
that was 10 years ago. And we sold the house after that. And every year for 10 years, we get together and celebrate with this husband and wife. And we're like buddies, you know, people you go to sit around and go to a Super Bowl meeting with, Super Bowl, you know, festivity. So, and we can't even remember what the issue was. But that could have gone a different way if I had responded to his anger with my own volatility.
Yeah.
So the point of that one is there are a lot of skills that were involved, but it all began with a decision. Bob's decision.
Yeah.
Let's see how you use the peace skills. Mm-hmm. And my decision, both of us envisioning peace, both of us putting in starting the process. We didn't know where it was going to go. Whether he was, you know, we had no idea.
You know, how can you become a person like yourself and Bob who is not reactive and not defensive? I'd say I'm more reactive to life. I'm more emotional. I have more, you know, Raja. I have in Ayurveda, they call it Pitta. You know, it's hot, it's heat. I wouldn't consider myself an angry person at all. I would consider myself a loving person. Love is my goal in every situation, loving the outcomes and stuff. But I think it's the way you run your energy, your nervous system. It's, you know, your composition, where you might run more hot. So what can you say to people who run more hot? Because you and Bob are very peaceful.
Yeah, well, I can tell you one thing that brought me to this place in real estate. I look back at one time when I got into a very strong argument with a client because he thought he was right and I thought I was right. Well, I learned that every time I've gotten angry, it's never produced peace.
Yeah.
You know, and nor goodwill mm-hmm. or success. So I often think of that often as like, wow, that was the culmination of the wrong way to do things. And you learn from your mistakes. I mean, when you have to ask yourself, when you get really angry with someone, has that ever led to peace or you feeling good about yourself?
Yeah, usually it escalates into things that you wish you hadn't said or that landed on their heart really bad and, you know, you regret it and you feel ashamed of yourself.
And the other thing I learned from that is that what I was arguing so strongly with this other person about, in retrospect, I think that my arguments, there were a lot of holes in my arguments.
Ooh.
So
you mean you weren't right?
Yeah. So I learned a lot of ways, you know, that it's just a better life when you move towards, and that's why to me, when you make the decision to set in motion a peace process, you're not going to do it, in my opinion, which may be different than yours, if you're at war with yourself, or if you've got to come to a point where you at least know this is the right thing to do, and I'm going to do it, and then start employing these other 9 skills we're going to be talking about.
There's a page in one of my yoga books, and it, on this page, there's 2 diagrams, and it's a yogi sitting in the position, you know, the sitting position with the legs crossed, and it's a diagram of energy. In one of the diagrams, and they're opposite, of the energy, both times they start in the solar plexus and it moves out to the body. In the first one, the energy is moving, the arrows are going all the way out of the body, from the solar plexus all the way out of the body, and like in a radius. And in the other one, the energies are contained in the body. They stop at the boundary line of the body, you know, of your energy field. And the point it's making is showing how you can leak your energies, literally leak your energies, by giving away your power to raging anger or extreme sorrow or sadness or hurt. These kinds of things beg us to leak because not come to ourselves. When we come to ourselves, we're powerful. We really are. When we come to ourselves and we wake up and go, whoa, I need to make a decision. I need to come to terms and create a peace process. Then you have automatically stopped those arrows from moving outside of you and self-contained them, so that you're owning your energies and your patterns, and you're focusing on balance and equanimity and calmness and restoration. So important to nurture yourself with that at a time when you feel that inner attack taking place of those emotions. So this is what helps me. It's interesting what we draw on as our resources to decide to create peace. Don't leak the energy. Don't give your power away to these emotions.
Well, you know, they say that once a consciousness has expanded, taken in new ideas, it can't retreat to its old position. So one of the things that helps me to create peace is that I know these peace skills. So once you know them and you know that they work, then you kind of have to be an idiot or very angry to not employ them. So for me, it's like, it helps me to know, oh, there is a way. And
I'm going to follow it.
And I'm going to follow it. Yeah. So the beginning of that solution is to find the energy within me to go down that path. And that's what we're really talking about envisioning and setting in motion. It's to say, I'm going to go down this path. It's going to be, it may be very turbulent. It may not even result in peace. And that's true in many cases. And I don't know how it's going to end. And it looks unsolvable, but I'm going to go down this path. And why? Because that's the highest way I can envision living my life.
Yeah. You know, in life, it's so unpredictable. You just don't know what you're going to be faced with next. And Scott and I were talking about Nelson Mandela this week, and how, you know, just a little empathy will help you to understand he was put in jail. He was a ruler. He was put in jail. And you think about the first day he was in jail, he didn't know for how long. You can imagine the rage within this man. He wasn't peaceful. And the rage that went on year after year after year, and the hurt and the despair. He'd lost his country. He had lost his identity, his purpose, his ability to be free and make decisions and affect the world. And 27 years later, 27 long years being imprisoned in a, 8x8 or 8x10 cell, he emerged with freedom. And what's so startling to me, I'd love to hear your comments on that, is that after 27 years, he could be ruined. I mean, he could absolutely be such a bitter, resentful, angry person, you know, just give me a microphone. I'm going to tell the world, you know, and just rage everything. This man did not leak his energies. He actually, this is a beautiful example of critical thinking to decide to create peace. And by golly, he had peaceful relationships with his jailers, with his guards. In fact, they sat in the front row in his inauguration 27 years later. He brought him up and put him in the front row for the celebration.
And interesting, he says that he had decided when he was in jail that he was going to treat his jailers with dignity and get to know them. And that is what created relationships between those jailers and he that ultimately, and at that point, here's a good example. It looked unsolvable.
Oh, golly.
And there was no, like, if I do this, I'll become president of South Africa.
Yeah.
It was like, no,
ambition was over.
That was not even in the horizon.
Yeah.
And yet the process, and it wasn't just the process of treating his jailers with the justice that he was not being treated with. He was also creating within his own fabric of his being and his heart the capacity to be a bigger person, which then as a process led to him being the right one to be president of South Africa and to bring in a great deal of forgiveness and truth panels but at that point he put in process without knowing the outcome.
Day one.
Without a plan, like if I do this, blah, blah, blah. It was like he did it because he was searching for the highest path.
Yeah. It's beautiful. You know that those two pictures that I was referring to, one is where you're leaking your energies, the other is where you're self-containing your energies. I'd like to add a third image here because once we contain our hurt, pain, anguish, upset, stress, blah, 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 once we contain that and we start figuring out a higher way, something happens to the energy within that actually does become a radius. It comes from the source within, from the soul, where it goes, it lights up the universe. So that's opposite of leaking the energy. It actually is emitting an energy. You actually become a generator of tremendous light when you can turn this mighty Mississippi River raging down southward, backwards, back up to the north.
When I was working on my master's and doctorate, I was in Albany, New York, at the State University of New York, Albany, and as part of my education, part of my work, I was the administrator of the Educational Opportunity Center, which was a place that served about 1,000, mostly teenagers here, but it was people who had failed in the high schools. And they were there and we helped them get their high school equivalency and prepare them for college. And also we had a lot of programs for work, but it was that was the time in the 70s when the nation was very divided racially, and there was a lot of, so a lot of that would spill over. And there's two things I remember. We took the attitude that everyone could succeed. There was no such thing as a failure as a student.
And I remember, wow.
I remember one young guy who was, the teacher came to me and said, he's just failing every test we give him on that. He can't read past, you know, a sixth grade level. The teacher asked me to come in and work with her. And so here we were envisioning something that was possible, although the evidence suggested it wasn't. And he was angry that he was failing. And so it came to me, well, let's just go back to a fourth grade reading level and let's see what happens there. And he aced that 100% on everything. We went to the fifth grade level and he aced that and got everything. And then we came back to the sixth grade and he started passing everything. So it was, he was so caught up in that he was a failure.
Oh, so you built his confidence.
Well, I just went back and said, look, this is where you're intelligent and just let's prove it.
Yeah.
And that was the process that brought him back. But there was another time in the same place where all of a sudden there were two people, groups, very angry, and they had knives, and it was black and white confrontation because that was the makeup of the city that we were serving. And I envisioned, we'd set a tone in this place, that a tone of justice and a tone of compassion and a tone of love, and we expected people to live up to that. This wasn't happening right at that moment.
That's so good.
So it's interesting. I stepped into the middle of that, and I just said to the two guys, I said, this is not how we do things this way. And the situation dissolved quickly. So, but it's like I decided to set in motion a process. I didn't know what the results were going to be with the student.
It could have been dangerous.
It was dangerous, but... but it was more important to set in motion a process. And you don't know where it's going to lead, but you know it's the right thing to do. And there's no right or wrong way to set in process. You know, if you and I are arguing, I could say, I'd like to talk because I want us to feel happier together. I mean, that's starting a process. So did you have another story you wanted to tell?
I don't know. I'm really enjoying this. Kind of lost in your story. I love it. I was thinking that something I learned from Scotty that's really valuable. And we did a talk radio show on Sirius Satellite for several years. And so people called in. And in a short while, we're going to ask you to get busy on the chat room and ask your questions, which we'll be happy to address. But so many people who called in, it would be with their spouse or their daughter or son or, you know, something really close in the immediate family. And over, I heard Scott say something that really sank into me. Do you remember what you'd say?
I think I know what you're going
to say. Well, people would say, well, how do I talk about this? You know, I'll be so angry. They'll be so angry. You know, we don't ever get anywhere. And Scott always begins a relationship discord with the words, in the interest of taking our relationship higher, I'd like to have this talk. I'd like to talk with you. Isn't that beautiful? And that is a decision to set into motion a peace process in the interest of taking our relationship higher. Who could turn down that invitation? I mean, wouldn't you love for anyone to come up to you and say, I'd like to take our relationship higher? And higher meaning, you know, I'd like to introduce more light. I'd like for us to come to a better place, a higher place. I'd like for us to rise into our better selves and create something magnanimous and beautiful out of this, you know, trash situation. It's a beautiful invitation. So in the interest of taking our relationship higher, I'd like to say something. That's gorgeous.
It diffuses things.
Yeah.
Because imagine approach B, let's say you and I are having an argument, and I say, I'd like to tell you why I think I'm right.
You know? And why you're wrong.
Well, but
and
I mean,
how wrong you are.
You know, it's about winning the argument, and which is a positioning that's really not one of creating peace. So
yeah, the ego fights that.
It tells the other person right off the bat that your motivation is not to win or put them down, but your motivation is to take the relationship higher.
Yeah. And so often in conflict, each person goes to their own corner and defends their position. When you say, in the interest of taking our relationship higher, you've put your arms around that other person as well as yourself, even though you didn't feel like it, but you want to, and you've decided to do that, and you want to take both of us higher. Man, that is love, and that is peace mastery. That is truly peace mastery.
You know, that little girl at Disneyland taught me a lesson because I kneeled down. She had lost her mom. She was crying. And I said, I'll stay with you till we find your mom. She instantly stopped crying and we just started talking together. So why, how was she so comforted by a stranger? You know, that was,
yeah,
that, you know, and it caused me to realize, oh, okay, so I can envision myself when I'm in agony or feel a loss. I can envision myself instantly trusting that there is a solution. That's what I learned from her.
You know, I'm just, it's just dawning on me here that deciding to put into motion a peace process is a decision to introduce light into the situation.
Yeah, no question.
It's a decision to move towards the light. And that is powerful. As a spiritual healer, I've done that a million times. I mean, that is my, that's my go-to. It's the very thing I depend on, is to step outside of whatever the problem is and go to the light and ask for the light, you know, to come over me and guide us and direct us and produce healing and show us how to go forth from there. It's a powerful thing. And let me just make another thing, because why is it powerful to go to the light? Because you have surrendered. You can't go to the light without surrender. I mean, it is a surrender act to go to the light. And just to move towards that light, especially in anguish, whatever your anguish is about or towards, the decision to go to the light with that problem and take it to the light and let the light shine on it, clean it, guide, direct, redirect, heal, nurture, comfort, guide. Powerful. I mean, that's really all there is to healing anyway. So peace, you know, creating peace is all about healing.
When we first married, and Shannon was professionally a spiritual healer, and she'd be down at the other end of the house with her room closed, and I knew people were calling her, but I would hear laughter, you know, and people don't call for spiritual healing. They call because they're desperate. They don't think something can be solved and they need help. And so I learned over the years what that laughter was all about, you know, because I could see that you were not accepting that a problem being presented to you was unsolvable, so much so that you could help them see it from a whole new way.
It's really helpful when it's not your problem. It's a lot easier to see, you know, to bring in the light for another person when you don't have, you know, emotion in it yourself. It's up compassion for the person.
Well, that's a good point, because you're going to have examples to be a peace master where you're a peace and you're helping solve some other conflict that's taking place around you. That's the easy one. Or you're also going to be a peacemaster where you're involved in the conflict. And that's the tougher one, because then you have to, not with the other person, you know, saying, are you willing to do something to work on this conflict? You know, that's like, no, that's not the first steps. It's like the first steps, am I willing to take a step? Because the beautiful thing is, if one person is able to take the step towards peace, it'll draw the other one in.
And there's a lot that's going on internally, and I'll be quiet in just a minute, we'll open it up. When you decide to set into motion the peace process, because I forgot what I was going to say. Anywho, do you want to open it up?
I'd like to open up, and I'd like to read something here
on
the chat window. By the way, chat is at the bottom of your screen, so you can open it up. But this person is saying, containing the energies seem to depend on our capacity to hold and tolerate discomfort without labeling it good or bad. I think that's very intelligent.
Yeah, very.
And seem to be important. I like the goal to take things to a higher level to guide the energies. Very brilliant. The capacity to hold and tolerate discomfort without labeling it good or bad.
Yeah.
Still find it difficult if the other party is not willing. Well, exactly.
When do you decide that it's not worth it?
What do you decide?
Do you decide it's not worth it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was what happened in my previous marriage.
Yeah. I had a situation with my daughter when she was in sixth grade, she was in a small little private school. It was Christian based. And there was a really small class. A lot of the fifth graders had left the school at that point and was kind of new to open up the sixth, seventh, and eighth grades. So they were small classes. And there were a couple of boys there and another girl. And the school started out okay the school year. And then as it progressed into the months, she was not happy. And I had a growing concern. About that time, her teacher called me. And she said, you know, your daughter's being teased a lot by two of the boys. And so the teacher said, I think it's because she's so pretty, you know, they're just taken with her, whatever. So I said, thank you for calling. And, you know, I'm concerned. She doesn't seem to be happy. And then some more time went by and I got another call from the teacher. And she said, you know, it's really, what's happening is really sad and unacceptable to your daughter. These boys are using foul language. And it's, and then as the more we talked, I gained the picture of really what was going on. My daughter was being harassed, a little sixth grader, you know, 10 years old, being harassed. And the language they were using was sexual. And so I went to talk to the teacher. She talked to the parents. And she talked to the boy every day. No, just totally ineffective. And I was beside myself. You can imagine as a parent, you know, all you want to do is protect your child at all costs every minute. And the very idea that your child's out there being harassed and bullied just made me crazy. It's just so unfair. And so I made an appointment with the headmaster right away, went in. And, you know, so I had decided to set in motion a peace process. Other than just talking to the teacher and her talking to the boy, I decided we've got to go to the top here. And imagine my shock. The headmaster said, I'm sorry it's happened. Of course it's not right. You know, boys will be boys. Oh my God. All more sexism. And he said, you know, he is the son of our athletic department, our coach. And what can I do? And I said, well, you can talk to him. You know, this is a Christian-based school. Do we not have principles to uphold? And he said, I can't risk it. Ah, can you imagine? As a parent, as a mother, at that moment, I was ready to put my fist through the wall or maybe through him. I don't know what. But that was so unacceptable. And so, you know, the hypocrisy that I was facing and the anguish I was facing. So I went home, I talked to my husband, and I prayed about it, and it came to me very clearly. Well, first of all, I considered, okay, well, I'll go to the board of directors and the board of regents or the board of advisors. We had a lot of boards. And then I thought, that's not my path here. It's not to stir up and make a big, you know, a bigger thing. My daughter's gone through enough. I just immediately changed her to another school. And it worked out so much better. So I couldn't imagine her leaving that school where she had grown up since preschool. And we were planning to do another year. And yet, you know, this is what happens when there's conflict and it has to be solved. And it might not be the solution you had envisioned. I had certainly envisioned a very different solution where the headmaster would say, we're getting to the bottom of this, you know, we're better than this, and we're going to have a talk, and this boy needs to be, you know, he needs to come to more maturity and respect towards girls, not just my daughter. And yet that didn't happen at all. The whole thing failed and collapsed in front of me, and I had to make a new decision. So in answer to this, you know, still find it difficult if the other party is not willing. When do you decide that it's not worth it? Scott, you're going to have to find it on your own when you bring it up, like Scott did after 7 years of marriage where it wasn't working, and where I did after many attempts to solve this problem for my daughter and it wasn't working. Sometimes the whole thing, the whole outcome that we never dreamed or wanted is actually going to be the thing you're going to walk through,
you know,
with your light.
Here's something kind of funny. Our best-selling book, The Love You Deserve, the very first feedback we got on that book was a letter
Oh, yeah.
from a husband who said, thanks a lot for writing this book. My wife left me.
Yeah.
But you know,
we took that hard. That was not our intention in writing that book, of course, you know, the love you deserve.
But what happened is that that woman read our book and recognized all of a sudden her standards went up.
Yeah.
She said, oh, this is what I deserve.
Yeah.
So one of the things I'd like to say to this question of when do you decide that it is not worth it? And it says here, when you feel you're continually being butting heads, hitting a wall instead of opening a door, when the other is still argumentative instead of being receptive.
Can we see the rest of that?
That is the rest of that.
Oh, I thought there was more.
No.
Okay.
So I have a couple things. Well, we could talk about this for hours and hours and hours, but it's an important question. First of all, bad relationships tend to keep us in isolation.
Yeah.
And so because we're stuck in this fighting relationship, we don't really see what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I'd say is make sure that you surround yourself with friends and people that treat you with dignity and justice and love.
And who care about you.
Because then you at least can bring, I mean, you're being on this call is doing that. You're being, we love you. We're treating you with respect. We're sharing ideas together in a, not a combative way, but a collegial way. So there comes a point when you may have to draw the line in the sand, but do it with love, where you can say, let's just say that.
Barbara said,
I could listen to you two all day. Thank you for sharing. But let's just say that I was in a relationship with someone that was argumentative and we couldn't get past. Sometimes you have to escalate it as a peacemaster to a place that will cause something new to happen. So I might say to this person, I'm going to just role play being you talking to the other person and saying, Joe, I'd like to have a conversation with you that may determine whether we stay together. And I hope that we can rise higher together because you have a lot of wonderful qualities. But we're always butting heads. There's arguments. And it's beginning to dawn on me that I'm not willing to live this way. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking you to change if you don't want to. I'm just saying that what's happening may cause me to leave this relationship. I'm hoping we can take it higher.
Yeah.
Now, if you take, that's a tough position to stake out. It's hard to say those words because you have to have a lot of self-restraint. You have to have a heart at peace to do that. But now you have that capacity. But the nice thing about that is you've set up a win-win scenario. Because now one of two things is going to happen. Joe is going to recognize, I could lose you by continuing what I'm doing. And you're not spewing out anger and saying this. You're coming at him with this energy of love that is causing him to have to reflect. So the one possibility is that he's going to make a shift. But the other, that would be a win. But the other win is that if he doesn't, you have done everything you could to move towards peace. And if it's not possible, then it becomes more obvious that you can leave.
Yeah. It takes courage. It really does. It takes a lot of courage to, and you have the courage. What I've found in my life is that I have apparently enough courage that I need for everything. And it's a resource, and you have the same courage. If you will muster that courage and pull it up, there's strength in courage. There's strength in coming to terms with something and facing the fact that it might not continue in a relationship that you have loved and wanted all your life. And here it is coming to a near end, and your conversation is going to be the thing that's going to bring it to a head. Nevertheless, courage is admirable, and you need it in life. And in situations of conflict where you're constantly butting heads, you know, I ask myself, you know, if I see Scotty, if I see I'm making him miserable, you know, he doesn't really complain, but I look at him, I see the facial expression, something, and I realize I'm bringing him stress. I love this man. The last thing in the world I want to do is bring him sorrow or stress or hardship. I have compassion. I love him. So I'll shift. I will change my way or whatever it is. I'll reconsider whatever it is I'm doing in order to bring him a happier life, which I have the capacity to do. So how come somebody's not doing that for me? You know, if you're bringing all this love to someone and all this care and concern, and it's not coming back, you need to look at that. That's not equal, and it's not ever going to work for you. You're just going to hang in there and keep on like it's working. It's not working for you. And there's great courage in realizing that.
Amen. And so becoming a peacemaster is setting in motion something that you can't control. And that's beautiful.
Yeah.
You can't control
decision.
And don't even try to control it.
Yeah.
You're just setting in motion a process that could go in some surprising directions.
Yeah.
And that is, to me, what creates the most peace within me when I'm dealing with something that's a lot of conflict, is to recognize going back to real estate, we have lots of conflicts. Clients, somebody makes an offer and they're angry at each other.
Oh, it's constant.
And Bob and, you know, like one person might, you know, client might say, you can tell them to go to hell, you know, and we tell the other agent they're not completely happy with your response. But one of the things we've learned is we get caught up in like, is this going to work out or not? You know, and that's old history in my life, because now I sit back and say, well, it'll be interesting to see how this conflict is resolved. But I'm going to be someone who's setting in motion a peace process and detached from that. So we have reached the end of our time here. This has been fun.
Yeah, I've loved it.
Thank you so much
for tuning in and being with us. And we really share a golden moment in our lives at this time in the world. And being with you means a lot. So thank you.
It sure does. Much love and happiness on the path to peace.
Take care.